Hello, and welcome to JAMA Evidence, our monthly podcast focused on core issues in evidence-based medicine. I'm Dr. David Simel, the editor of the Rational Clinical Examination series and professor of medicine at the Durham Veterans Affairs Medical Center and Duke University. Today, we're discussing the clinical evaluation for bacterial conjunctivitis. Joining me to talk about this topic is Dr. Davin Johnson from the Department of Ophthalmology, Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario. Davin, welcome to the podcast, and thank you for your recent contribution to the Rational Clinical Examination series, which you titled, Does This Patient with Acute Infectious Conjunctivitis Have a Bacterial Infection?
Thank you for having me.
The title of your article is a bit unusual for this series, because typically we are trying to answer the question of whether a person has a condition or not. And in your case, we're starting with conjunctivitis and trying to figure out whether or not the cause is bacterial. Now, to get there, we have to have a framework for how the generalist physician can recognize the red eye as representing conjunctivitis. So give us some pointers on the evaluation of a red eye to help us understand when conjunctivitis is likely and when it isn't.
First off, you know, it goes without saying that red eye is an extremely common symptom. Whatever specialty we are in medicine, whether we're a generalist physician or even an orthopedic surgeon, we're bound to encounter patients with red eye, and sometimes even in our own personal lives as well. So if you look at causes of red eye, there's literally hundreds, if not thousands, of potential causes of red eye. And these range in severity from mild causes or benign causes like a subconjunctival hemorrhage or fatigue or dry eyes to more serious causes like acute angle closure glaucoma and corneal ulcers. So of all these potential causes of red eye, probably the most common group of diseases to cause red eye would be conjunctivitis. So conjunctivitis, as the name suggests, is inflammation of the conjunctiva, which is the mucous membrane that lines the anterior surface of the globe and the posterior surface of the eyelid. And so from a pragmatic standpoint, conjunctivitis is usually differentiated from other causes of red eye by the presence of red eye along with discharge. And conjunctivitis has certainly been found to be one of the most common, if not the most common, reason for a patient with an ocular condition to present to a generalist physician. So if you take those patients that present with redness and discharge, which we're going to call conjunctivitis, we then look at the other potential causes of conjunctivitis. And so the three big ones would be allergic conjunctivitis, viral conjunctivitis, and bacterial conjunctivitis. So usually the question that comes to a generalist physician is really mostly whether this is viral versus bacterial conjunctivitis. And the reason for this is that in general, allergic conjunctivitis is readily differentiated from the other two based on obvious symptoms suggestive of allergies. So these include, for example, the presence of other allergic symptoms, and in terms of ocular symptoms, the presence of itching, which is highly suggestive of allergic conjunctivitis. So again, we really get to the question that is really a daily occurrence for a generalist physician of, is this patient that's presenting with acute onset of red eye and discharge from a viral infection or a bacterial infection?
Okay, so infectious conjunctivitis and allergic conjunctivitis are obviously really common conditions. What would the red flags be that should make us think that this might be something more than conjunctivitis?
That's a great question. And I have to say that, you know, my experience is that most family physicians and emergency physicians have really good intuition in knowing when this is not a benign case of conjunctivitis versus something more serious. I should probably first add that that is not to say that conjunctivitis cannot be severe. There's multiple examples of where conjunctivitis is a red flag thing that needs to have more urgent assessment by ophthalmologists. For example, any conjunctivitis in a neonate less than 1 month of age is an emergency. And there's a few reasons for this. It includes the potential infectious agents that cause conjunctivitis in this age group, as well as the immature immune system of a neonate. Even in an adult, you know, there can be severe cases of conjunctivitis. Most classic of these is from gonorrhea. I've seen a few cases of these myself, that these cases tend to progress very quickly and can lead to corneal ulceration, even loss of the eye. But getting back to the question, taking a patient presenting with red eye, you know, how do we know it's not something more serious than conjunctivitis? And again, I find that the vast majority of the time that physicians are really good at knowing, and perhaps this is related to the fact that the eye is an organ, usually it presents itself well, and that usually there's severe symptoms with more serious conditions. So what exactly are red flags? Well, these would include things like severe vision loss or really any vision loss, pain, as well as history. For example, is the patient a contact lens wearer? Have they had any recent intraocular surgery? Intraocular surgery in particular is an important point to make in that any patient that presents with redness within 2 weeks, for example, of say a cataract surgery, really that patient has to be seen by an ophthalmologist to ensure that they don't have something like an endophthalmitis, which is an infection inside the eye. Conjunctivitis can certainly be severe, but in terms of non-conjunctivitis causes, you know, again, the acute vision loss, severe pain, and then things like recent intraocular surgery and contact lens wear certainly warrant referral to an ophthalmologist.
Well, thanks for that. You've reassured me that I'm going to be able to detect serious problems of the red eye. But let's get back now to the common problems. And before we get to the criteria that help us separate out bacterial from viral conjunctivitis, why does it matter?
When we think of a bacterial infection, immediately our minds are transitioning to antibiotics. And so I think the most obvious implication is that bacterial conjunctivitis is generally treated with topical antibiotics. The question is, how important are topical antibiotics for bacterial conjunctivitis? And I think the gist is that topical antibiotics, they help to hasten the recovery of bacterial conjunctivitis. Then the question that physicians are going to ask, if there's no perfect way to differentiate a viral versus a bacterial infection, what's going to happen if I take that patient that I think has a viral infection and it turns out they have bacterial and we don't give them antibiotics? And I think that the answer to that is that most cases of bacterial conjunctivitis are self-limited. So what that means is that even if they don't get antibiotics, they are going to resolve on their own. Just to throw out some numbers, for example, it might take a week as opposed to 5 days with antibiotics. But at least I can reassure people that if you're really worried about missing a bacterial infection, most cases are going to resolve with or without antibiotics. I think the major exception to that would be a gonorrhea conjunctivitis, as I mentioned before, that can lead to rapid problems without appropriate antibiotic use. But those cases are very few and far between, and they're usually differentiated based on the really severe symptoms and copious amount of mucousy discharge. So people often ask, you know, what antibiotics can be used? And there's a wide variety of antibiotics that can be used. Even over-the-counter antibiotics can be appropriate for bacterial conjunctivitis. And the exact type of antibiotic is going to obviously vary geographically. As an extension to the effect of the antibiotics for bacterial conjunctivitis, I think that one can probably surmise that by taking antibiotics with a bacterial infection, it probably reduces the contagiousness of it as well. Both viral and bacterial conjunctivitis can be highly contagious. And so it might help someone return to work or school faster, for example. I don't think people need to necessarily worry about the case that looks like viral conjunctivitis and is actually bacterial, because again, I can't stress enough that most mild cases are going to resolve on their own, whether from a bacteria or a virus.
In our rational clinical exam paradigm, we need to know something about the prevalence of the disease before we factor in the symptoms and signs. So tell me a little bit about how the age of the patient affects the likelihood of bacterial infections for the patient with a red eye.
Bacterial conjunctivitis is more common in younger children and is less common, and in fact, perhaps even rare in adults. In terms of what literature there is out there on the topic, there's not a vast amount of research of consecutive series of patients with conjunctivitis, but what literature there is available does tend to support this. The fact that in older children and adults, the vast majority of conjunctivitis cases are from a viral etiology, and most of these viral cases are adenovirus. And again, bacterial conjunctivitis is more common in younger children. I think it certainly supports, even without examining the patient, doing a proper history, that perhaps having a lower threshold for prescribing of antibiotics in children.
One of the things that drives you crazy for your child in daycare is a call from daycare that your child has pink eye. Having experienced this myself as a parent, what is the obsession with daycares about pink eye?
Yeah, I sympathize with those calls. And I'm not so sure there's anything different about, say, pink eye as opposed to a cold in a child. But I think it does highlight the point that pink eye or viral conjunctivitis is incredibly contagious. I mean, I even think in our eye clinic here last week, we had numerous patients contract viral conjunctivitis from our clinic. And that's not to say that any of our staff were negligent with respect to cleaning equipment or anything, but it just shows how infectious these adenoviral cases actually are. Like, for example, once they get onto surfaces and books and chairs, they can stay infectious for a long time. Going back to the call from daycare, I think that A, it's incredibly contagious, and no other family at the daycare wants their child going home and giving pink eye to everyone else at home. The second thing as well is, I think, is we've all had a cold, and we can sort of hide the fact that we have a cold and, you know, go to get groceries or perhaps even go to work with a mask on. But with pink eye, I mean, your eye is on full display. It's just such an obvious symptom that there's a bit of a stigma associated with it as well.
Well, thanks for that explanation. It doesn't help when you get the call, but I appreciate what you're saying. Other than age, let's now go over the historical and clinical features that you found for conjunctivitis that help us distinguish bacterial from viral cause. So tell us what the best features were from your review.
Good. Yeah. So we'll start perhaps with cases of viral conjunctivitis. Based on the literature available, we found that best features at differentiating viral from other forms of conjunctivitis were pharyngitis, preauricular lymphadenopathy, and contact with another person with red eye. So perhaps we'll just kind of briefly talk about what each of those means. So pharyngitis, in other words, sore throat, is very common in patients with pink eye. And this is reflective of the fact that the most common virus responsible for pink eye, which is adenovirus, often also causes a cold at the same time. This is why there's a term for this. It's called pharyngeal conjunctival fever. From a scientific standpoint, there's actually certain serotypes of adenovirus that are more likely to cause this specific clinical syndrome. So I find certainly from a real world scenario, this is also highly suggestive in the real world as well. In fact, we often ask patients, do you have a cold? If patients say they have a cold and they also have a red eye, then immediately I think your suspicion for conjunctivitis being a viral etiology goes up. And on the contrary, your suspicion of it being a bacterial infection goes down. The second of these is preauricular lymphadenopathy. So in other words, this is an enlarged or painful lymph node just in front of the ear. So I was always routinely taught to check for this in patients with red eye. It's important to don gloves when you're doing this because, again, the conjunctivitis is extremely contagious. And usually I just sort of gently massage anterior to the ear. And when this is present, it's usually a very obvious finding in that the patient's going to say that it's sore where you're pressing, or you can feel the lymph node. And the last of these is contact with another person with red eye. I think it's worthwhile to note that both bacterial and viral conjunctivitis can be contagious, but perhaps this is indicative more of that viral conjunctivitis often does occur in outbreaks. So all of these findings were associated with high likelihood ratios for viral conjunctivitis. So in other words, if you take your pretest probability of, you know, what age the patient is, what's the likelihood of having a virus versus bacterial infection, that they would all increase the likelihood for a viral infection. So if we look at bacterial conjunctivitis, the two most important findings were A, the presence of mucopurulent discharge, and B, the presence of otitis media. So the first one's relatively obvious, and the thicker the discharge, the more likely someone is to have bacterial conjunctivitis. Often it's so thick that when patients awake in the morning, they have to sort of pry their eyes open. They can't just use their normal eyelid muscles to open the eye. The second of these, otitis media, is probably really more applicable to children, and it's usually associated with a hemophilus infection to have the presence of otitis media and conjunctivitis. Probably if there's people listening, they're probably going to immediately ask after I talk about these things is, well, how about watery discharge? Was this associated with the presence of viral conjunctivitis? Because that's what, you know, if you read in textbooks, viral conjunctivitis, they often talk about watery discharge and the presence of something called follicles of the conjunctiva. So we did find that watery discharge was more likely in cases of viral conjunctivitis. So specifically about 3/4 of patients with viral conjunctivitis versus 1/4 of patients with bacterial conjunctivitis had watery discharge. But the likelihood ratio was not as high. I think it was around, pooled estimate was around 4 for watery discharge. Finally, ophthalmologists often talk about the presence of follicles. I don't find those to be particularly useful from a clinical standpoint, and we didn't find them to be associated in our study with an overly high likelihood ratio for viral conjunctivitis.
Davin, that's a helpful framework. You brought up follicles, and I do wonder, when we refer a patient to an ophthalmologist, what do they do differently in their exam from what we do in the office for conjunctivitis?
I think that there's very limited difference. I mean, I can tell you, as a cornea specialist seeing patients with the conjunctivitis, they walk into the room and they sit down and they start reporting their symptoms. You know, I woke up with this red eye and it's tearing and so forth. Immediately, I'm thinking to myself that, you know, I'm going to be doing a limited exam just because I don't want to get all my equipment covered in adenovirus. And so there's not a huge difference in the examination that a generalist physician can do. When I teach red eye to the medical students, I often tell them that between a good history taking and external examination of the eye with a pen light or the light from a mobile phone, you can really garner a lot of information. And so it is true that ophthalmologists will have access to what's called a slit lamp, which is basically a microscope that allows us to examine the eye under higher magnification. But again, I would argue that it's not necessary for diagnosing these cases. You certainly can't see follicles without a slit lamp, but I think you can do a pretty good exam for these cases without too much equipment. And nor should you be using a lot of equipment, like I said, just because it's just so contagious, these cases of adenoviral conjunctivitis.
In your review, you did notice some limitations in the literature. Can you tell us about those?
Despite the challenges of this literature, the data that we've collected represents some of, if not the best, pooled estimates for prevalence and symptoms of conjunctivitis. Having said that, the literature is not perfect with respect to this. We found a relatively modest number of population-based studies on the topic. So by population, I mean, you know, looking at all comers of conjunctivitis referred to, say, an emergency room or a generalist physician. So there's a relatively small number of those studies. The second thing is, as well, is that I'm really grouping things together when I'm saying bacterial conjunctivitis, or especially for viral. I mean, viral conjunctivitis can mean a lot of different things. I spoke before about how adenovirus is the most common cause of a viral infection of the conjunctiva, but there's still many other causes. These can include enterovirus, influenza, even COVID can cause conjunctivitis. And so we're grouping these all together when in fact there can be slight differences in symptoms. And it is true that there are patterns, but there are slight differences. And secondly, with adenovirus, you know, there's many different serotypes that can cause conjunctivitis. And like all viruses, these are constantly mutating. And so we're always going to see significant variations of these infectious diseases temporally over time, as well as geographically. Say if you do a study of conjunctivitis and you do it for a 1 month period now versus next year, you might have different findings from the 2 years. So it definitely is a challenging area to research. You know, our study is only looking at single signs and symptoms, but when we're seeing a patient in real life, we're putting everything together. You know, we're learning that this patient had a friend with a red eye and he or she is complaining of tearing of the eye. They may have other findings like swelling of the eyelid or preauricular lymphadenopathy. So, you know, as clinicians, we're combining a constellation of symptoms and signs together. And so our data doesn't really capture that. You know, I think it's, again, really important to stress that even with limited access to ocular examination equipment, between a good history and a basic external examination of the eye, even beyond conjunctivitis, you can get really good data and you can really have a good idea of diagnosis and management without any sophisticated equipment. I think that the vast majority of cases of conjunctivitis can be managed by a generalist physician. But at the same time, I do hope that physicians around the world don't hesitate and have ready access to an ophthalmologist to see patients if there's any uncertainty at all. So this can include any atypical symptoms or failure to respond to antibiotic therapy. I think that the last thing that we want to see happen is that patients come in with atypical symptoms and go through multiple courses of antibiotics and they're not getting better. I guess the point is not to hesitate to refer if something looks serious, is atypical, or it doesn't respond to treatment as expected.
I enjoyed our conversation today, Davin. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
More information about this topic is available in the Rational Clinical Exam and on our website, jamaevidence.com, where you can listen to our entire roster of podcasts. I'm David Simel, and I'll be back with you soon for another edition of JAMA Evidence. This episode was produced by Shelley Steffens at the JAMA Network. The audio team here also includes Audrey Foreman, Mary Lynn Ferkeluk, Lisa Harden, Daniel Morrow, and Hannah Park. Dr. Linda Brubaker is the senior editor for JAMA Multimedia. To follow this and other JAMA Network podcasts, please visit us online at jamanetworkaudio.com. Thanks for listening.